Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You listening? What's up, fam? You listening to the Urban Sports Scene? I'm Wole. Waiting on my homies, Will T and Ray Jeezy. I think I got Will T. I got Ray Jeezy on the line. Hold on. Ray, you on?
I'm on. What's up?
What's going on? Yeah, my bad. I thought you got my conference call thing, man. Cause then when I switched,
I did. It was kind of late though. I mean, I saw it at the last, right after. Well, right during the time I was calling you, my fault.
Oh, no problem. Not because you know, Will said, well, listen to Urban Sports Scene. We're on live. Oh, Will T's running late. I'm hoping that during the break, the first break, we'll switch over to the conference line to make it easy. Because Will T's going to call in. That's going to interrupt everything we're doing. So I want to make sure like the call-in situation will work appropriately. But yeah, man, what's good with you, man? We ain't had you for the last couple of weeks, man. What's good with you?
Well, as you may know, I was on the Quarterly Report podcast last week.
Yeah, so man.
It was dope. It's pretty much the same topic. So if you listen to that, everything I said on there, I'm pretty much going to say again, except yeah. I may add a few additional thoughts. Plus, you know, once the final edit came out, mm-hmm. some of what I said was not featured. So
right.
I'll have some additional insight. And shout out to my man, Ed Strand. He used to be the producer for the Round Ball Report, or co-producer, and I was on his show too, talking about the upcoming WNBA season, if the Mystics are going to have a parade, and you know how we move forward with, you know, just the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
This season was supposed to be starting this month, so it's crazy, man, how the future is so uncertain when it comes to sports. The NBA is trying so hard, but
I don't know
if it's worth it. Anyway, I guess, you know, we'll talk a little NBA when it comes to the Last Dance documentary.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm with you. The NBA should trash it. I know you hear all the reports about, you know, deciding, you know, trying to figure out they should have a season and that, this, that, the other. If I'm like LeBron and anybody else who tends to get hate, man, why would you want a season with an asterisk on it? You know what I mean? People going to call it out. If you win, they'll be like, all right, you didn't deserve it. It's an asterisk. It's that type of year where, you know, they won't give you full credit for winning a championship.
Well, for LeBron, it is about winning. But for others, as you saw Jared Dudley's tweet, it's about money. He's like, we're going to lose billions.
Mm.
He's like, they don't understand that without the TV revenue, it's already a loss. Mm. You factor in the China issue that started the season out, where Daryl Morey, of course, made his comments, and they lost a lot of money over there. So we're looking at you going from making millions to maybe just making, you know, thousands in the NBA next season, because it's going to take such a huge financial hit. So guys really still want to play just for that reason. But like CJ McCollum said, is it really worth it? If you really are playing for the love of the game, like a lot of them say, mm-hmm. which is bull crap as we can see, then you're going to keep playing no matter how much you make. I mean, this is why guys play in the G League and overseas or wherever. Some guys don't make a lot because they do truly love to play basketball. Just mm-hmm. being able to get paid $75,000 play basketball is dope, but you know, again, it's been a multi-million-dollar business for so long, and it's going to be hard for guys to make the adjustment. But err on the side of caution, because it's not about the players, it's about those around them, it's about people in the community too. So we got to do the right thing as people, man. And so much, of course, revolves around money, and that's life. I get it. So I shouldn't necessarily judge, but again, looking at what's going on, and I see it firsthand, it's crazy.
No, I'm with you, my man. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our new Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Well, T would normally say this, but he's not in the building. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. We will preview Kevin Durant's Showtime documentary, Basketball County in the Water. It's about Prince George's County ballers. Finally, at 8:35, we'll discuss the MJ Bulls documentary, The Last Dance, episode 7 and 8, aired on Sunday. But first, Kevin Durant's Basketball County in the Water airs Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Showtime. The documentary talks about PG County Ballers. It's going to feature players like KD, Victor Oladipo, Michael Beasley, Quinn Cook, Rebecca Brunson, Marissa Coleman, and much more. Are you excited about this documentary?
Absolutely, and everybody who lives in Prince George's County should be excited that during a time like this where we can't go out, we don't have much to do, we do lean on Netflix and cable and documentaries mm-hmm. for entertainment. That's our primary source of entertainment at this time. Now, we know the weather's getting ready to warm up. There's a whole other story. But I really think it's dope that the world gets a peek into Prince George's County and to see what goes into just so many guys being successful on the basketball court coming from here. And you and I went to college together. We went to HBCU. Mm-hmm. We know how the demographics work.
Yeah,
you were separated by where you were from. And people used to criticize us because we would say we were from D.C., but yeah. It's not because we wanted to be from there. It's because nobody knew what PG County
exactly.
was. So that's the only reason that we said it.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other discussion. Yeah. But anyway, you know, a lot of times, especially when we were in college, I want to say our rival was like the Philly area,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
Philly, Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to always try to say, oh, y'all from the suburbs, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, again, this is not your average suburb. This is
yes.
this is not a suburb where, you know, everybody has their grass cut, the big houses.
Yeah.
Now, do you have that? Of course. But, man, folks grind when they come from PG, man.
Yeah.
I think it's a big deal that the world is going to be able to get a look at us. And, again, because of social distancing and the lack of resources right now, A lot of folks are going to watch this, man, and it's going to be a lot of folks hating. But Kevin Durant is arguably the best player in basketball,
mm-hmm.
so the fact that he's from here to me is already validating.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, man. You know, it's like, you know, putting this county on the map for a while, for years. To be honest with you, I felt like our county, and it's because we're from this county. Our county has been in, like, one of the more underrated hotbeds of basketball talent. I mean, there are guys that haven't made that you don't even know of that can go, and they probably won't be in this documentary, or they will. Who knows? But, you know, we've always, you know, you've seen it. I've seen it. Like, the talent here is amazing. And like you said in college, like, you know, we used to say that we were from D.C. because people didn't know about Prince George's County. But, you know, I'm glad that it's going to get this attention. And I all praise mm-hmm. to Kevin Durant, man. I've always said this, like, in terms of, like, putting folks on, Kevin Durant, to me, is a great ambassador of the county.
Oh, absolutely. Because, to be honest, he's never really said he's from D.C.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But again,
mm-hmm.
it's not his fault. But, again, it's the general view of this area. You're from the DMV. You're from the DC metro area.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not pinpointing Prince George. He's always pinpointing PG. But to be honest, if you look at the trailer too, you saw Steve Francis is in there. He's not from technically
yeah.
from PG.
Yeah,
but when you factor in the whole DMV, DC, and Northern Virginia,
yes.
I mean, it's a lot of ballers. And that's what I was wondering. Like, how are you going to squeeze all of this into one documentary? I mean, you got Delonte West, Ty Lawson, people that I haven't even seen mentioned.
Yes.
Joe Forte,
John.
Keith Bogans.
Yeah.
And, you know, as the discussion goes on,
DeMar
I played
Johnson.
With guys that did not, right, that didn't even make the league, or they did make the league, but they weren't necessarily big names, but
yeah.
they were big around here.
Yes.
I'll get to that. Also, you know, a friend of the show, Butch McAdams, he's going to be on there. Adrian Danley, who played for DeMatha, he grew up with my pops.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just going to be dope to see how far the history goes back. And, of course, you can't forget Len Bias. I wanted to mention him in the documentary.
Yeah. And also, to be honest with you, Walt Williams. You know what I mean? Crossland, then went to Maryland. Was Maryland's best player till Joe? Like, well, I want to say, well, till you could say till Joe Smith, whatever. That's arguable. That's debatable. But you know, Walt Williams is another guy that, you know, to me, is an icon in this area in terms of PG basketball. So, what do you hope comes from this documentary?
I just hope now that PG County is in the discussion. Our mom mentioned this last week. He was like, he mentioned he was from Richmond, Virginia. He
mm-hmm.
said, when you hear about basketball around the country, you hear about L.A., New York,
mm-hmm.
Chicago. He said, but very rarely is this area mentioned. And now, again, Prince George's County, we're talking about a county.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Being mentioned in the same breath as New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, much bigger areas. So I'm excited about just, again, the exposure that Prince George's County is going to get. And also, looking at the numbers, how many people have made the league from PG? I know that I think the documentary or the trailer says
25.
I mean, I feel like I could think of more than that if you span beyond. I mean, but it starts at 2000, I think it's talking about.
Yeah, since 2000.
But still, I mean, that's still crazy, though. Yeah. Still a crazy number. And another thing is, I want to point this out.
Mm-hmm.
The brother who came up with the idea and pitched it to KD, who's, I guess he's the director.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name right now. Maybe I see John Beckham here. I'm looking online.
Yeah, I think it's Beckham.
Okay.
I think it's Beckham.
He pointed out, I want to say it's him, I could be wrong, but he pointed out one of the reasons why he wanted to make this documentary is because he said, when I hooped here in PG, you know, I would just be an average dude on the court. But when I traveled outside and hooped like in other states, he said I was like one of the best dudes out there. And I'm like, why at home I'm not, you know, really standing out. But when I travel and ball, I'm one of the best players on the court. He was like, because the competition is so real at home. And I was like, dang, I didn't even think about it like that. And I'm somebody who, you know, I played all over. I played in rec league.
Yeah.
You know, I played against some of these guys who are going to be mentioned in the documentary. It's going to be crazy. So I'm excited about just how it's going to highlight the talent disparity in comparison to places outside of the D.C. area.
Yeah, and I hope they talk about some of the popular gyms or rec centers, you know, in the area. I hope they, you know, diving all up in it. You know what I mean? Like, just don't talk about some of the run and shoot. Talk about like some of the popular AAU teams. You know what I mean? Like Will mentioned the PG Jaguars. Like that back then when we were young, that was like one of the best AAU programs in the county.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Well, you already know. DC Assault is going to be mentioned because Clint Cook played for DC Assault. I want to say Kevin Durant did too. Team Takeover, that's the Grand Brothers played for Team Takeover. And I know that we just lost the Memphis former coach. I don't know why his name is still in my mind right now. Morgan Wooten. Yeah, we just lost him. I think he's going to be featured. Mike Jones, current coach of the Memphis. The Memphis, even when the Memphis isn't at their best, they're still ranked nationally. Mm-hmm. It seems like every year. Even Chase Young played ball for the Magic.
So exactly.
it's crazy how just the talent and so many guys had the potential. It's just, you know, it's tough to make the league, which shows how dope this is because, again, many guys made it. Quinn Cook is one of the best stories that came out of PG because he's undersized. He always worked hard and, you know, he was cut. He was released. He went to the G League, back to the NBA. He bounced around. And he never gave up.
Yeah.
He never settled to go overseas because he was going to make his dream come true. And he's won a championship in college and in the NBA. Not many guys can say that.
Oh, he was a grinder, man. He's a grinder. So what, like for me, like I want, it's like, I want to make sure they dive. I know it's from like, basically it's going to be from like Kevin Durant, Quinn Cook, Michael Beasley. And the other individuals. I know there's gonna be their time, you know, growing and becoming an NBA, becoming a baller in PG County and an NBA player. But I want to see if they go, like I said, dive back into like when we were in high school, when we were in middle school. Those players, you know what I'm saying? Like I mentioned Walt Williams or I mentioned DeMar Johnson. You know what I mean? I want to see if they talk about those individuals. I could say Joe Forte, but I want to discuss more of those individuals in the second half of this second half of the segment. But I want them to dive in I want them to talk about those individuals as well.
Yeah, I even mentioned, and I know we might further discuss this, but a guy like Chris McCray who went to Maryland.
Yeah,
now
good
he
one.
Wasn't the biggest name on the college circuit, but he was a legend in high school. I told my mom he was Steph before Steph was introduced to the world. He could pull up from half court. He's like 4 or 5 years younger than us, but when we played against him in rec league, he was on the team that played against us because he was that good. And I remember him hitting a game winner from half court, which the refs cheated that didn't count. Now this is going against us.
Yeah.
and I was like, bet. But I mean, we all thought that he was going to be a star. Now, he did play in the league for a while. He played for Milwaukee, I know.
Yeah.
Even Travis Garrison was really good back then. He made the McDonald's All-American game. So, like I said, it's going to be hard to really put in the words or to cover just this rich history all in one documentary. Sam Young, you remember him? Went to
Pitt. Yeah, Sam Young.
He's from Clinton, man. And it's so many guys that may not be mentioned in this documentary that were really good playing the league. Keith Beeney is a legend, but he came before the year 2000. He was in the 90s, but he played for the Kings. He played on those Weber, Jay Williams teams, Jason Williams, sorry, White Chocolate. He played with them. So it's gonna be great to hear also the historians. You know, Butch McAdams, that's our man. Yeah. He's always one that can share with you just the rich history of basketball and sports culture from this area. So they're going to have to expand beyond PG. We know, we saw a TV franchise in it. Carol Lawson is from Northern Virginia, but to me, she's right up there. She was on the Washington Post high school sports show every week. It seemed like dropping buckets, lifting weights. She was just a baller. I actually saw Marissa Coleman too in person. She played for St. John's.
Yeah.
She was a baller. Tough.
No, I got to interview her after the Mystics game. She's cool. She's a super cool chick. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was tough. She was tough in Maryland, man. She was tough. It's I wanted to say something. I forgot what I wanted to say. I would be disrespectful to mention that there have been like over a dozen WNBA folks since 2000 as well. It would be dirty. Like, so this county all around is men and women have really produced ballers. You know what I mean? Like this county, again, you know, we like you mentioned, Ray, and all, you know, for most of our basketball lives, we've heard about New York. We've heard about L.A., you know what I'm saying? But, you know, to have a county now being a county, not a city, but a county, you know, to be spoken like amongst those cities is something big.
I think what is also a blessing is just the demographics and seeing the way this county looks. I mean, we know that D.C. used to be called the Chocolate City.
Yeah.
Well, PG County is one of the rare black counties in America. Mm-hmm. People who are from here always tell me and others, listen, don't think that this is what the rest of the country looks like. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. You know what I mean? When you travel outside and when you grow up outside of PG or the D.C. area, it looks totally different, man. And mm-hmm. I think we were blessed to really go up and learn about our culture and our past, and knowing that, you know, like I went to Duval High School. That's located on the Glendale Plantation.
Yeah.
Duval himself, the man, was a slave owner.
Mm.
These are things that you're not necessarily taught when you grow up outside of this area. And it's unfortunate. I think the awareness that is being given now is growing
mm-hmm.
because, again, race relations are changing. You see Confederate flags being removed. We saw that in South Carolina. But it's taking time. It takes tragedies, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Look what just happened in Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
So we're blessed, man, to grow up in this area. Like, you know, are we feeling threatened to go jogging in our neighborhood? No.
Yeah.
So just outside of basketball, just, again, this county to me is very unique. It's very special. And I'm not just saying that because I'm from here, because it's true. Just look at it.
It is.
Look at the facts.
No, it's special. Definitely special. We'll continue this discussion after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces. Thank you. You are listening to the Urban Sports Team with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy. Still waiting on Will T, but hopefully he'll call in. He's got a lot going on, but we don't have him. You know, hopefully he gets everything settled. Ray, I know, actually, before I want to get into this one question, do you feel like for this documentary, is it hindered that they're playing, you know, in the mix of The Last Dance and also on a Friday night?
Well, I think a number of things hurt it, including those two factors, and also Showtime, the network itself. I just feel like Showtime documentaries can be dope at times, but when you compare them to like HBO, mm-hmm. or if you compare it to even 30 for 30s on ESPN, I feel like the it's just not the same production quality.
Mm-hmm.
I know that KD had a previous documentary on HBO that was successful.
Mm-hmm.
This time it's on Showtime. So I don't know if there's going to be a lack of viewership because of the network. And a lot of times when people are choosing packages in terms of cable, and we already know with all the streaming,
yeah.
a lot of people don't even either have cable no more,
mm-hmm.
or you only may pick you know, one or two movie channels, Stars being one, because they got one of the most popular shows in the country.
Yeah.
And Showtime lacks when it comes to exposure. I mean, we see this in the boxing world.
Yeah.
So I think that definitely could hurt it. My guess is it'll be on YouTube at some point, or it'll be available to stream. So it'll get views, but I wouldn't be surprised if the initial numbers might not be as high, of course, in comparison to like The Last Dance. I think The Last Dance landed 6.1 million yeah. viewers the first time
yeah.
it came on. So it's going to be crazy to see how it compares, but you can't compare that. I'm sorry. I mean, it also speaks to, you know, MJ's star power, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But again, KD, in his own right, produced a great documentary, as I just mentioned. So I'm thinking that it's still going to do well. But Showtime is probably the biggest hindrance, in my opinion. Although, I didn't even think about that initially. Somebody brought that to my attention. I was like, you know what? I agree with that. So that's not my original thought. Just put it out there.
No, it's crazy because I'm thinking, like, the Showtime thing, and that's a good point. It's not like it's HBO or like if it was on ESPN or HBO, it's ESPN for real. If it was like an ESPN doc, I think I'm not saying it would rival Jordan, but I think it would do pretty well, especially in a time where we're at right now, where people are at home anyway and they need something to watch. I think it would work out. You're right. I think it's more of the Showtime aspect rather than it being on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that most people are still at home on a Friday night, you know. So I think that.
Oh yeah.
If, you know what I'm saying? So if it was on ESPN on a Friday night, I think it would do 10 times. I'm not going to exaggerate. It would do better on ESPN than say a Showtime. You know what I'm saying? So
I agree. I also think the timing is great in terms of just more people being inside and at home, I also feel as though they kind of rushed to get it done.
Mm.
And I feel as though this whole pandemic kind of hurt the end of the production.
Yeah.
Because looking at the trailer, you see some older interviews in there. Now, I'm not saying that they probably want to feature that anyway, but I'm seeing, you know, interviews that took place in the past. So I don't know if maybe he should have waited to release it once this was all over with. But I'm guessing that they say, you know what, people in the house need to go ahead and get this out there. I don't know how much he's promoting it either. You're on Twitter more than I am. Have you seen it trending? Have you seen KD really pushing it? Because a lot of people haven't really seen the trailer. I mean, Will T didn't even know it existed.
Yeah, I don't think. I think you see it more like on IG. And sometimes on Facebook, too, because you mm-hmm. see people posting, reposting it. I don't, you know, Kevin Durant's not on, like, Twitter. For me, I don't see him on Twitter often. Like, I don't catch him.
He's
often.
Not on it that much. That's what I was thinking, too. I looked. I didn't see it. So I'm like, is he really pushing it? Mm-hmm. Like, he could be. Of course, we're going to see it trending on our timelines because a lot of our friends are here.
Exactly.
I mean, we're in the D.C. area. But, I mean, in terms of that national exposure, I feel like he needs to push it. And even some of maybe guys that he rocks with, think about this. They have connections. They, meaning KD and Quinn Cook, have connections to a lot of guys who have a good national following.
Yeah.
Draymond being one of them. Love him or hate him. If let's say Draymond's retweeting Kevin Durant, or even though they're not really that cool, but he's cool with Quinn Cook. Klay Thompson's definitely close with Quinn Cook. So, and then you got LeBron as a teammate of Quinn Cook. I feel like they could probably push it a bit more.
And then you got
if they really tried to, but maybe they're like, you know what, we're gonna let it sell itself. I don't know what the thought process is behind, I guess, the marketing and promotion of it.
Yeah, and you got, you know, you mentioned Quinn Cook. You know, he's like teammates with LeBron, Kevin Durant. I still believe Kevin Durant's still cool with LeBron and Kyrie. You got, you know, and then also you got Beasley, who's cool with D Wade and LeBron. You know what I mean? Because he was former teammates with him. So you like you said, Ray, they have people that can kind of help push the product. You know what I'm saying? But let's get into this topic. Growing up, who were the ballers you used to, you know, hear about religiously in the county?
Yeah, we've mentioned some of them already. Mm-hmm. I do mention Joe Forte.
That was the guy for
and
me.
Keith Bogans. Yeah. From a personal standpoint, I'm not the biggest Joe Forte fan because of just how he was as a person.
I heard about
the way he acted, and it eventually played out on national scale. I mean, he literally would try, and this is high school we're talking about. You ain't even made it to league yet, and if you try to speak to him, man, he would sometimes just ignore you because, again, he had an ego, man. We have mutual friends, and it was rough, man. And again, it played out. And what didn't help was he killed his freshman year at Carolina. But anyway,
he was
one of the biggest names when we were in high school. We all graduated the same year.
Yeah.
I remember Bogan scoring 40 against Parkdale, and it didn't even look like he was trying. Forte set the game out. A lot of times, the massive players would do that. The top players like Quinn Cook set out against Roosevelt, things like that. And Bogans didn't even seem like he was trying, and he scored 40, man. He was so athletic. And he goes to Kentucky and continues. Now, in the NBA, he wasn't as big of a name. But, he was that guy. I mean, obviously, DJ, you mentioned him earlier, DeMar Johnson.
Yeah.
What was great about DJ is DJ played in public school up until he went to Newport.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. Mike Sweeney never went to a private school.
Never.
Never.
Never,
and,
man.
And that's just awesome because – if you really look at statistics, who makes it from PG County public schools? That's where it gets tricky.
Yeah, that's where it gets
tricky. Kyle Lawson, he ended up going to Oak Hill. I love Mike Sweeney because he never transferred, man.
Oh,
and
Jeff Green?
Put them on the map, bro. Put them on the map. Jeff Green, too.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? No, I'm with you. Like, Mike Sweeney put Oxon Hill on the map. Like, I remember hearing about Mike Sweeney. I mean, not because of the joke Ron. You know, we used to joke Ron about.
Oh, man. They were like rivals, man. They unfortunately on the same team. If you look at Ron's situation, what happened? Mike Sweeney took his spot.
Yeah.
A younger dude come in and take his spot. The coaches immediately start showing love to a freshman. You like, hold up. This is our team.
Yeah.
So I get where Ron was coming from, but as you know, we had Mike on the show.
Yeah.
Mike never looked at it like that.
He never
Mike
did.
Mike was like, that was my man.
It was pretty cool.
And he was humble. And then he went to Georgetown, and he was
a beast.
He was a baller there too.
Yeah. It was a lottery pick for the Knicks. But when you look at like DeMar Johnson, that was a guy that I used to hear about all the time. Like I remember I was working a summer job. And somebody was like, yeah, you guys see this dude DJ, man. Like, you know, I mean, he be balling the Herbo. He be killing this, that, and the other. And I'm like, DJ DeMar. So I'm looking him up, and it's like, oh, snap. Like, this dude can go. You know what I mean? Like, and he was, you know, he had range. He had bounce. I mean, he went to Cincinnati, was balling with Kenyon Martin in him. Like, dude was super talented. You know, Joe Forte was a dude. Like, I remember watching Joe Forte, in college. I mean, I saw him play a couple times at DeMatha, but I remember watching him play in college. I was like, you know, he all right. But then for some strange reason, he would just get buckets. He would just get buckets easy buckets his freshman year. And I was like, yo, dude nasty. Then it just got to a point where this dude was nasty. Keith Bogans, I feel like it took him a couple years in Kentucky to get his swag. But he was a baller, though. Like, Keith Bogans was a baller. I mean, we have so many, like you mentioned, dudes that used to go, you know what I mean? And like those, I would say Bogans in my time, Bogans, DJ, and Forte were like it. I remember like the Bogans Forte thing always sticks. Bogans and Forte always stick out to me because I remember remember the situation where I'm sure you heard about it, like when Bogans got at Forte's brother.
his brother.
Yeah, you heard
fighting.
Jason
ended up going, I think, to Ivy League school.
Yeah. So it was like, I remember hearing about that. That why that they that's like those two always stand out to me around that time frame. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah, shout out to Arenze on the locker room too. It's funny that he went to Duval way after me. But he had always been tall, man, and everybody knew he was going to be good. But he ended up, you know, being able to transfer in high school and play some time in the NBA. His brother also played in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are from PG. I remember watching his brother. Well, I covered his brother in the G League game.
And it's,
I'm laughing because, you know, G League games, I mean, have maybe 100 people in the crowd at best. And he was just, you could just hear him on the court saying, this is my city. You know what I'm saying? This is my home. And I'm like, bro, like, calm down. But, you know, it was still dope to see somebody who grew up in this area, played in this area, come back and play professionally.
No, definitely.
And again, that's somebody that you probably wouldn't even think of. Now, he forgot who I was when I played with him up at Sportfish.
I remember, yeah.
Jones called me Jordan Farmer. I'm like, bro, like, dude, like, really? I remember when you ain't even had a hairline. But anyway, it's crazy because we played with Arenze, you know, both when he was young and after he finished at Syracuse.
Yeah.
He was dominant on the court playing against us.
Yeah.
But you see on the national scale, he's not even mentioned when it comes to like PG ballers, but it goes again to show you how, you know, good the ballers are. But going back to high school, I don't know if you used to watch the McDonald's game when we were in you know, 10th, 11th grade.
Mm-hmm.
But when DJ played in the All-American game, he wasn't even one of the biggest names there.
Yeah.
But he was shooting from
half court. I know, bro. His range was crazy. I know.
Capital Classic.
Yeah.
The Capital Classic, he played in that as well.
Yeah.
And that was before it became the Jordan Classic. That was more of a game where a lot of guys from around here got to stand out.
They did.
And I just felt like he didn't get necessarily respect, but he went and took the respect when he went to Cincinnati and played with an even bigger name. He played with a number one overall pick.
Yes.
So it shows you how good he was.
No, I'm with you. Like, that was the thing that stood out to me about DJ, his range. I mean, nowadays, that's normal. Like, you know what I'm saying? Nowadays, that's normal. But what he was doing back then was crazy. I'm going to shout out to my man Ed Bazin, too. Eddie went to Roosevelt. Eddie went, got drafted by the Chicago Bulls, played for the Bulls, started a few games for the Bulls, matter of fact, with Chicago. But yeah, Eddie, and obviously we know, everybody knows about Delonte West, went to Roosevelt too. A hard worker. He's, you know, dealing right now with mental illness and whatnot, but hopefully he gets his life in order, man. But that was a dude at Roosevelt, you know, grinded to get to where he was at, went to St. Joe's and balled, you know what I'm saying? And balled with Jameer Nelson and, you know, kind of, you know, took that into, you know, being a first round pick in the NBA. So that's a dude for me. To me, that's a grinder too. You know what I'm saying? So, I'm not sure he's gonna be mentioned. I hope he's still mentioned because, again, if you look at his story, how he got into the league, you know, basically at that time, St. Joe's was basically a mid major anyway. Went from there, got into the league, as a first round pick. You know, that's a big time story too, man.
And nearly made the Final Four.
Exactly.
They had a smaller team, but that was, again, that was the Warrior-style basketball that the world wasn't ready for at the time. I mean, we mentioned guys like Antoine Walker. If Antoine Walker played on the Warriors today, oh, my gosh. I mean, he was before his time. Just like, to me, St. Joe's was a tad bit before his time, but they still made national headlines because they made such a deep run. And their coach, Martelli, he was so confident in his group. I remember him going at Billy Packer. It was dope, man. I just felt like Delonte West at the time necessarily still didn't get the respect he maybe deserved because he was a shooter.
Yes.
We talk about range, he was a scorer. And for real, he had underrated pass.
He did.
Underrated pass. He could dribble too, man.
He could dribble. Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys could. I think that's why maybe like the Bogues and the Fortes weren't always the sexiest guys in terms of highlights or whatever. But they, again, if you played against these dudes, they were head and shoulders above the rest, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, but all these dudes, you know, for me, I mean, for all of us, all these dudes, you know, they come from, like, Adrian Dantley. They come from Lynn Bias. You know, these are the end of, those are the beginners. Those are the dudes for us, for, you know, this area who pretty much, you know, set the tone in terms of being where this county's been at in terms of basketball heritage.
Most definitely. Len Bias is a name that's still being mentioned. It's being mentioned as part of the Last Dance discussion because he was probably Jordan's biggest rival before he passed. And many feel like he was more talented than MJ.
A lot of people do.
So, I mean, the potential is there. And just to kind of backtrack a bit, because we're talking about Len Bias is coming up in a discussion after how many decades have passed.
Yeah.
And we're talking about, you know, basketball culture as a whole. There are so many talented people who we still haven't even brought up yet.
I know.
We still haven't even brought up. It's crazy. That's why I'm wondering, how are they going to fit all this? I mentioned on Armand's show, Kendall Marshall. I know I'm bouncing around all over.
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Kendall Marshall, I mean, look how good he was. Look how good of a passer he was at Carolina. And have we even talked about him yet?
Nah.
And Quinn Cook, I mean, they were playing against each other as kids. You know, kids of the ages that you coach.
Dude,
I'm telling you, man, it's amazing. And the fact that we still talk about guys like AD. AD has a big role to play in AAU. Same thing with Troy Weaver.
Yeah. And I think...
Now, you know, that whole scandal kind of ruined... It kind of put a stain on Troy's name, which is why the Wizards, from what we heard, did not hire him, which was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But, dude, I mean, it's amazing. Troy Weaver, look at where he is. Still in OKC doing big things. Yeah. Where's he from?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, man.
And then you got, I mean, folks who did make the league, but I felt like could have, if I felt like they went to a different school. You have Austin Freeman, Chris Wright. I felt like, you know, in a different situation, and they showcased certain differently. They're individuals that could have made the league. They were talented coming, you know, going into Georgetown from Prince George's County.
Delonte Holland.
Holland. He had situation. D could have been the league if things went the right way from Roosevelt. Then you had I want to say Randolph. Was it Randolph Childress from Fort Washington? Or am I wrong about that?
That's a good question.
I know he's from the area. I know he's from the area. I'm not sure it's Fort Washington or D.C. I'm just not sure. But there's so, again, I feel like there's so much we could talk about within these two segments. But we got to go to the Last Dance. But there's so much we could talk about. Bro, we could talk about, like, PG Hoopers for the whole hour. Real talk.
So, I mean, what we can do is once it airs, we see what content is featured. We'll probably come back and have a discussion. You know, Markelle Fultz is going to be.
Damn, I didn't even mention Markelle. That's what I'm saying.
Being a great story. I know. He's going to be featured in it as well. And he has a similar story to Quinn Cook. I mean, he worked his way up. Again, didn't make the varsity team. He was not on the map at all. When I first met his mom and I mentioned him to you, his mom would say it maybe two YouTube clips of him out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fast forward just a year later, he's conference player of the year in the Catholic League. Is it the WCAC? And then, I mean, bam, the rest is history, man. It's crazy how fast he blew up. I don't know him personally. I just want to put that out there, really. I mean, I know Upton, of course, lived not too far from him. But I'm just saying that it's amazing that he's going to be featured as well. And to me, he's very similar to Quinn Cook and how he came up and how he worked so hard. But, I mean, he's a number one overall pick.
Exactly.
And Kevin Durant can't even say that.
Amazing, man. All right, man.
I respect that.
Oh, Will's been. You came right. We're about to go to break, man. Appreciate you. All right, Sunday's episode of The Last Dance. We're a little emotional. We'll talk about episode 7 and 8 after the break. Listen to Urban Sports Scene. We'll teach
you.
My man. You dig?
Deuces.
There you go. You're listening to The Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wole. Here are my boys, Will T and Ray Jeezy. Let me patch him in real quick. All right. So episode 7 and 8 of The Last Dance aired Sunday. What stood out to you about episode 7? Will T, I'm going to start with you.
Of course, you know, the easy thing is Michael Jordan getting emotional towards the end, talking about, you know, how he pushes his teammates. And if you don't have that high level of expectation for yourself when it comes to this game, you know, it bothered him, you know. So that in itself stood out to me for episode 7. Also, it was good for them, you know, to really go kind of in depth about his relationship and how close he was with his father.
Yeah, man. It was tough.
Prior to his father passing, and then also addressing having him and David Stern addressing the long time rumor that, you know, Michael Jordan really didn't retire. He was suspended for 18 months.
Ray?
I have kind of a different take on these last two episodes. Now, again, we were just talking about Prince George's County, the DMV, and as we know, a lot of guys around here come in contact, you know, whether it's in the barbershops or whatever. And back when Jordan played for the Wizards at the end of his career, I hope that's not mentioned in the documentary. talk about a stain on the legacy. My God. But guys that played for the Wizards at that time, I'm not going to say no names, but they used to come get their hair cut, and they all said, we can't stand this dude as a teammate. Like, he is ignorant. Like, I never want to play with the dude. I was so excited to be a teammate of Michael Jordan, and now my expectations have been extremely let down because of just the way he acts and the way he talks and the way he carries himself, how he tries to belittle you. So it's no shock that that's being shared. I mean, if you didn't know that anyway, that's always been rumored. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You hear that about a lot of guys. I mean, the Kobe Bryant of the world. Dwight Howard, man, he couldn't take it, obviously. But anyway, to get back to my point is I already knew that. So seeing that wasn't a shock. But seeing Michael Jordan, the way he changed, like Will said, he got emotional. And I watched that part. He's like, you can't handle it and whatever. And he's about to cry. But the thing is, why do people change? Why did MJ change? We always knew, based on what was said about him at Carolina, he was a hard worker, right? However, yeah. He was a humble dude. He rode a bike. He hang with the veterans when they were out doing their thing. Mm. But all of a sudden, you get money, you start gambling. He even referred to himself jokingly as God on there, like you just talked to him. Mm. Like, his whole ego changed, man. And I'm like, to me, that's where he went wrong at. Why can't you stay like this humble dude? You can still push your teammates. You can still lead by example, being the first one to the gym, the last one out. But as soon as the endorsements come, the shoes, you know, I want to say the brand, I feel like that's when he became a different person. And I was hoping that he would rediscover himself once he lost his pops, who that's who used to keep him grounded, his parents did. But that person never came back. Even to this day, like to say the glove wasn't a problem for him. You know, I feel like once the money grew, the brand grew, that's when he changed. And he never was the same. And that's why he alienated himself.
Well, let me just say, I just want to ask you this question, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Or make this statement, rather. It's easy for us to say that, being in this position that we're in, opposed to being in his position, because, and I'm not saying he was right, you know, in his treatment towards his teammate and other people, you know, Jerry Krause and other, you know, the people that he's, you know, the highlights that we saw him kind of belittling people on a team. But it's easy for us to say that because we aren't in his shoes and we aren't in that place that he is. We aren't put up on a pedestal like he is. Sometimes when people are elevated almost to like godlike status in some people's eyes, it could do things to you from a, you know, from a personality standpoint. And I'm not condoning his behavior, but I'm just saying, you know, let's put some things into perspective.
Well, I feel like it's a choice because for him, based on what I saw and based on what I've observed, that wasn't personality driven. Like, for example, Kevin Durant is still the same humble guy he was from the time he started playing basketball, still just as quiet. Now, again, that might be a personality difference, but you won't hear him saying, oh, I'm God. You won't hear Kevin Durant trying to belittle his teammates. It's sad, but it was the other way around. Draymond's what we won before you got here and all this other mess. Maybe that's not the best comparison. Joe Forte, we talked about him in the last segment. we heard that he had that arrogant complex and it ended up playing out. I mean, if you're that way from the time you're young because you know you're the best or whatever, that's one thing. But to me, he transformed into that guy. Now, you might be right. Maybe because of all the fan attention, maybe because of the pedestal he was put on, that went to his head. I don't know, but I feel like that's where he messed up at, as opposed to just continuing to be just, why can't you just be this hardworking guy who wins championships, you know what I'm saying? I don't understand why, you know, you had to become this guy that turned into a quote-unquote bully or someone who is demeaning towards others. I just felt like it's because of, again, that platform and that pedestal that he was placed on, and he let it go to his head.
I mean, leadership is done.
I'll say one thing.
Go ahead, go, Will T. Go.
I'll say one thing. No man's going to call me a hoe.
I know, right?
Me and Mike would have just, I would have just been like, yo, after the first one, I'd be like, Mike, you need to chill on that. Chill on that.
But,
you know, I understand, you know, that's what you like to do. But nah, you're not calling me no hoe.
Right, but
we
you
won't have to. We just want, hey, disrespect is disrespect. We would have had to throw the hand.
But isn't that a role? I mean, and this is, well, first off, leaders, I mean, people lead in different ways, right? So for anybody, you know, it is what it is. Some people lead a certain way of encouragement. Some people feel like they got to get on you. And in both ways, you know, could work. It could work fine, just depending on, you have to know the temperament of your teammates, right? Or the people around you. But I feel like bullies, they tend to pick on people they know they can, you know, won't do anything back, or they feel like they can handle.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like we talked about this before in a prior show about, I think it was everybody, like how, you know, Xavier McDaniel stood up to Jordan, right, for the Knicks. Like, he went up at him. Jordan ain't throw no punch. Jordan ain't do anything. Xavier McDaniel was all up in his face. But Steve Kerr is an individual you decide to go at. You know what I'm saying? Scott Burrell is an individual you decide to go at. You know what I mean? Like, you know who you're going at. Like, you have, like, when you're a bully, if that's what you are, you target certain people. You're not targeting. He didn't target Dennis Rodman. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't target Dennis Rodman. You know, Dennis Rodman is crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know who you're going to target. I mean, it is what it is. I'm just keeping it a buck. Because Dennis Rodman is crazy.
I know. It's like Kobe never tested metal world people.
No, he never did.
He knew who to mess with.
You know what I'm saying? So
he knew you could mess with Sasha Vujacic.
Exactly.
Like Kevin
Steve
Garnett.
Nash.
Kevin,
Steve
did
Nash.
The same thing. Kevin Garnett wouldn't go with Lamar Odom because he knew he didn't want that.
Exactly. I totally agree.
He bullied those like big baby. You know what I'm saying? Glenn Davis. He went at certain people. So yeah, I would agree. Jordan didn't really back down, but he wasn't a tough guy when certain people were testing his face. So yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I feel like it was a choice. He became that guy by choice, man, because he felt like, you know, I'm God, basically. I mean, he said it in a joking way.
I missed that. He said, I'm God. I missed that.
Remember they were throwing it going
on? Well, Randy Brown came in and asked him for a ticket.
Uh-huh.
Right. And then Randy Brown said, do you care what the ticket is? Jordan asked Randy Brown, do you care what the ticket is? And Randy Brown replied, I don't care if the ticket is up there by God. And then Jordan replied, well, you just got a ticket from one.
Oh, damn. I didn't hear that.
Right.
I missed that. I got to rewatch it.
He said, edit that out.
Jokingly. He said it jokingly.
Oh, okay.
He said it
jokingly.
Okay. Still, though. Jeez. Dang, Jordan. I mean, it is what it is, man. Like, you're a brand, man. It is what it is. So, I ain't.
When you joke like that, again, I think that it's some stuff. It's like we joking each other.
Yeah.
Maybe we still cool, but we still mean something behind it.
Exactly.
I mean, you know what I mean? I felt like he was on that level. Now, again, he immediately was like, edit that out. You know, and they're like, nah, keep that in there because folks wanted the world to see that this is kind of how he acted, man. And that's why he struggled with competition, because he felt like he's supposed to be better than everybody. So if you beating him in golf or you beating him in a car game, he's like, wait a minute, you can't be beating me. I'm Michael Jordan. Like, nah. And that wasn't the dude that was riding a bike his rookie year.
You must have liked that segment, that part.
It's not the same dude.
You must have thought highly, like, this dude riding a bike, man. Jordan was humble as I don't know what. You must have really like harped on that.
No, I feel like that's relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're in the NBA, but yeah, you're still using a bike as a mode of transportation. You know what I mean? Now, granted, he's young. People change. People evolve. I get it. But I'm just saying, some change that can be beneficial and some that can be detrimental. And I feel like that God complex, so to speak, is what was a detriment to him as a person. I mean, you heard what B.J. Armstrong said.
Oh, God.
He said, if you didn't love basketball, you did not like this dude. I mean, he kept it 100. Mm. Or his grand has done interviews lately that said, I didn't like the way he tried to motivate me. Like, you heard about him not wanting Horace Grant to get in.
Yeah,
don't feed him. Like,
Say what you say, Will?
You would have had to fight. All
right, this is my thing. All right,
you would have had to fight.
All right, this is my thing about that thing. Like, Horace Grant is a grown ass man. If he didn't step up to Jordan when he said that crap, like I would have lost so much disrespect for Horace Grant. Like, I'm not sure what happened in that situation. Within Horace Grant, did he check Jordan? Because I mean, no one's gonna ever mention it. Did he check Jordan on that or whatever? Because if you didn't. Oh man, I would lose so much respect for Horace Grant. I'm dead ass serious too. It's like, bruh, somebody tells you not to feed me, not to feed me, bruh, you gonna sit your ass down.
hey, bruh, you heard the story about Bill Cartwright. Basically tell him, look, I'm gonna break both your legs and you never gonna play ball again if you ever disrespect me. And he never called medical.
Yeah, he called him medical Bill. Because Bill Cartwright was, at that point in his career, was injured a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept saying it. And then the story goes, Bill Cartwright dropped the ball during the middle of practice. He told him, you keep saying that, bleep, I'm going to break both of your bleep legs.
Oh, I'm just
and
saying.
He told him, you'll never play basketball again. That's what Horace Grant should do. Horace Grant should knock him out on sight, bro.
When I heard that story, or somebody text that to me or whatever, I was like, bro, stop it. Like, that can't be true. Like, it just can't be true. You know what I mean? Like, I hope Horace Grant, you know, did something to him. All right, so I want to talk about Game 3 of the 1994 Eastern Conference Semifinals. All right. Was Scottie Pippen disrespected? I mean, does your image of Scottie Pippen change a little bit after, you know, the backstory within that, or you already knew about that, you know, him not trying to come in the game?
I already knew about that. Look, no matter anyone who's ever competed on a team knows that sometimes, like, we all have to play a role at moments.
Yeah.
Right? And in that moment, Scottie Pippen should have relented to Tony Kukoc and let Tony Kukoc take the final shot. If that's what the coach drew up, that's mm-hmm. what he drew up. Like they said in the documentary, I hate that that's, you know, something that that's still being discussed to this day, because anyone who follows Scottie Pippen's career knows that typically not how Scottie Pippen acts or carries himself.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always that one stain that, you know, people want to bring up.
You see the backstory, though. They didn't like Kukoc. They went at him in the Olympics.
Yeah.
So that was one factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then additionally, we already know if MJ is on that team, MJ is getting the last shot.
Exactly.
Scottie Pippen was supposed to be taking his place. So I totally understand where he was coming from at that time. Mm-hmm. And he made a choice. And really, we should respect it. In retrospect, he said he wished it didn't happen, but he said, if you put me back in that same situation, I would have did the same daggone thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, of course, you know, writers who want to get clicks are going to say, oh, man, at least Isaiah Thomas says he would do it differently now. Scottie hasn't changed. I'm like, come on, man. Again, Wilkes, he said it. That's the one, like, main stain or blemish. And look how much disrespect he endured just contractually and from management. Scottie Pippen should still be praised for the way he handled himself at that time.
No, I know. I'm with you. I see where Scottie is coming from. I actually think the documentary kind of made it look even worse than what it actually was. I felt like they made him look like they made him look super selfish. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, granted, as for in terms of the team concept, it doesn't look good and it's not a good thing. You don't want, you know, everybody knows that it is what it is. I don't need to harp on it. But I think the documentary kind of played on it a little bit too much. You know what I'm saying? Like the whole Bill Cartwright, you know, in tears and this, that, and the other. Yeah, I just felt like you knew the picture you were painting. You dig what I'm saying? Like, it's the same thing about how when Scottie was holding out. Oh, you seem selfish. I just don't, in that aspect, I think there's a message that I'm not liking within all that. And maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just being overly, you know, critical of the situation. But I just feel like looking at like the messaging in the documentary, I feel like it's like they're trying to make Scotty seem a little immature.
Well, I didn't take that from it. What I took from it is that they were also trying to paint a picture, or the writers, creators of this documentary, mm-hmm. of the passion that this team had for mm-hmm. winning. If after a game-winning shot, a win where you're supposed to be jubilant, these guys are crying and frustrated because they feel as though their leader kind of let them down, so to speak. So I didn't necessarily think it was trying to paint Scotty in a bad light. I mean, it happened, mm-hmm. but I can also understand your, you know, point of view as well.
I mean, it happened, but if we're being honest, this documentary is about what?
It's about Jordan.
Michael Jordan. Let's keep it about. And The Last Dance, yeah. Right? That's not anything that's really relevant mm-hmm. to the storyline. If we're discussing the storyline of the Bulls' last season with Michael Jordan,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And another thing, ESPN. I know on Twitter they follow us on Twitter, right?
No, ESPN.
They don't follow us.
Huh?
They don't follow us. ESPN doesn't follow us.
They follow USS, right?
No, they don't. Not ESPN. No.
Oh, I thought y'all said they did. Okay.
That's all good. What you want to say, though?
Well, 100, man. Let's go.
Shut up.
What were you trying to say, though, Will?
Please, next time you decide to do a documentary on somebody, stop switching time.
Yes, time I'm sorry. It's getting too much now.
Back and forth. ESPN is under the Disney, is owned by Disney. Disney has a rich history of being the best storyteller in the world. You know, some of the Disney movies and pictures and cartoons. Y'all should be ashamed of yourself with all this time jumping. If I weren't someone who was alive and actually followed the game during that period of life,
mm-hmm.
I would be confused as hell.
Yeah, I know. I would too.
If I'm a 14 or 16 year old following watching this ESPN documentary, I'm really not able to get a true cohesive feel for Michael Jordan and the Bulls that last season mm-hmm. because of all the time period jumping back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And that's, let's be honest, if we, you know, the documentary is, you know, it's for us, for people like us, right, who grew up, Wally, I know you weren't a fan, but I was a fan of Michael Jordan.
It's all good.
To us to get an in-depth, to get an in-depth look of, you know, better knowledge of who Michael Jordan as the man was and some of the folklore behind, you know, that period of time when the Bulls were winning six championships. But to open this up to a new audience, you know, 14, 15-year-olds, 10-year-olds, some people who may, you know, who are in their early 20s who never saw Michael Jordan but only know him from the shoe, you're not doing a very good job of telling the story, a cohesive story about, you know, his career in that last season. Just my opinion.
Yeah, I understand. Like I said, I just feel like the purpose of them going back is to always give perspective. That's what the whole purpose is. Now, you're right. If you don't know much about basketball, but you just say, you know what, I'm stuck inside, this is popular, I'm just going to check it out, it would definitely be confusing or potentially confusing for someone. But for me, I do get it. I understand where they're trying to shed light as to how this compares to where this part of his journey was. I understand that part, you know, because mm-hmm. there is a lot of comparisons. Like they had two separate three-peats, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point where they were losing and they were, you know, not the hunted. They were the hunters mm-hmm. and then they became the hunted. So I understand it. You know, like I said, I get the point where they're trying to, you know, relate how this part of his career, you know, impacted this part of his career. But I don't disagree with what you're saying, though. But I know that would be the rationale that they'll give if you ask, why would you keep jumping back and forth? To me, it's annoying, though, at times, yeah. Oh, yeah, I know you do. I mean, I'm just saying.
I get it. It's 10 episodes. You could you could cover all of that in episodes 1 through 4.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's true, too.
Like, that whole backstory. You could have even done it where you started at a point in time where, well, because we all know who the major characters of that last run are.
Yeah.
Bill, Michael,
Scotty, and Robin.
And Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
You could fill us in on their story, and then you reach a center point where they all come together, and then you start to tell the story of that last season from there,
mm-hmm.
right? But to keep jumping back and forth and back and forth, I'm like, WTF.
It's like, you know, it's the greatness of the last year. So what do you remember during Jordan's comeback craze? Because they feature that, too.
Go ahead, Ray. I'll let you go.
Repeat the question, because I thought we were going to call
first. It's all good. So what did you remember
during that whole
go ahead, Will T.
During that whole comeback phase, I remember that first game versus Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, you know, I'm not going to say I remember.
It was
like
on NBC. I remember the game.
But I remember that. Yeah, it was on NBC. I believe it was a Sunday.
It was a Sunday.
I remember the anticipation, you know, because Huh?
It was a Sunday. I remember that game, too.
What did you say?
It was a Sunday. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, I remember the anticipation. It was, you know, it was almost like, is it true? You know, because you were kind of, because that's, you know, I was a very big fan of Michael Jordan. I was like, I can't wait. Is it true? Is it true? Is it really going to happen? This is really happening. This is really happening. So I remember that first game, and also being a Knicks fan, of course, I remember the 55 in the Garden.
Well, I'll go ahead, my bad.
No, and then I just remember during that, I believe it was like the last, I think Jordan joined them for the last 17 games,
yeah,
15 games.
Something like that.
I just remember feeling like that's not the Michael Jordan that I grew up seeing. Right? Like that was a scaled down version of him. There were just certain things, you know, the turnaround wasn't as fluent as mm-hmm. it usually was.
The elevation wasn't the same.
His ability to...
The elevation wasn't the same. The bounce on the shot wasn't the same.
Yeah, the elevation wasn't the same. The release wasn't the same. And, you know, because I played basketball, there was a move that he always did where he would kind of rock to get you off balance
mm-hmm.
and kind of explode and get lower to get around you and to explode to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the same. I just remember seeing those things about his game, knowing like this isn't the same like the Jordan that I'm used to.
I'm going to speak to his ego again, because all of what you said is true. what stood out to me is David Falk is putting out a nice, you know, a message to the press, a statement about his comeback. And he's like, no, I'm going to write my own. This don't feel like I'm back. Like, here we go with that. Like,
I thought I was going to be the one.
What's wrong with that after taking some time to, you know, gather myself, to deal with family, personal issues, to pursue my dream of baseball, something that I did for and with my father, whatever. All that stuff I felt like was relevant, and it could have been part of the statement, be like, I'm back because I'm the man, you know what I'm saying? And again, he was humble when he came back, because you came back to a young Penny and Shaq who really, if their egos didn't get in the way, of course,
could
have ran the league for a while.
Yeah.
But I think that was also helpful to see, because he was humbled at times in his career, and that was one of them. And then Horace Grant getting paid back for the meals that he wouldn't try to let him eat out the dog. Hey, listen.
Hey, yo.
It came back to bite you, Slim. But it did motivate him, obviously, in the rest of history.
Yeah, I remember I do remember the Knick game.
Dog.
I know, right? I remember the Knick game. And I do remember when Nick Anderson plucked him. I was like, yo, Jordan just got plucked. In the playoffs, I was kind of like, damn, I was kind of hyped for that one, because I was rooting for Orlando big time, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that was a...
Michael Jordan lost the game for them. Like, yeah. He lost the game.
He lost the game. That's what made it so odd.
That's when he should have deferred.
Mm-hmm.
He should have deferred. And I'm surprised still didn't enforce that back then.
That Tony Kukoc type of thing?
Was the one that got Jordan to play team basketball.
Yeah, he enforced it, the whole Tony Kukoc type of thing.
Yeah, I know we're going overtime.
Yeah.
But
we're doing it for you,
one of the things that I vividly did. I appreciate that. One of the things I vividly remember is that LeBradford Smith game.
Yeah.
When I remember watching that.
you remember that game?
Scene sports. Yes, I do. I really do. I remember that LeBradford Smith game. I remember watching on HBS Home Scene Sports. It was during the weekday. I believe it was a Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, my.
And watching that and just thinking, like, LeBradford Smith is killing them. And then I remember that watching that game, I think it was that Wednesday on WGN.
Oh, wow.
And Jordan just going berserk for that 37 in the first half. So, yeah, it's good memories.
Yeah, I have vague memories of it because I remember – Whenever the Bullets played the Bulls, it was significant. But it's crazy hearing Phil Chenier's voice on that joint. You know, he was commentating back then. You saw Never Nervous, Michael Adams.
Yeah,
it took you back, man. That's what the documentary has done, too. You see a lot of guys that you grew up watching. Kendall Gill.
Yeah.
Obviously, some of the guys on this. Yeah.
Wesley.
Many guys that you don't hear about no more. you look at Those get hot rod wins. You're like, dang, go on, man. I remember all these guys. So it just took us back. I'm glad the Bullets was featured. We had to get something for the DMV in there.
Yeah, the Bullets were there. Yeah, that's the bad. I didn't see Lito Echols, though. I didn't see him. I was trying to see if I could find Lito Echols.
I knew you was going to say that.
I don't remember that
the
game.
Bullets legend. Daryl Walker was on that joint. You seen Daryl Walker?
Was Don McLean on that team? Was Don McLean out there? I ain't see Don McLean.
I saw Tom Googly Eye.
Oh, Don McLean was in it. He was at
Never Nervous. Never Nervous.
Things have changed so from a basketball perspective, like the NBA, like our professional basketball team. Things have changed so much.
You mean in general?
I'm not going to say these Wizards. Oh, no, I'm not going to say these Wizards teams are great. But at least what I feel, you know, when I see the Wizards play now.
You see a basketball team.
I at least think on some nights they have a chance.
I know what you're saying. You're like, I know what he's saying. I know what he's saying.
I was just like, yo, like, this is an L, but I'm going to just stay up late, and I'm going to watch.
Will, you're basically saying, like, you're seeing a basketball team nowadays, and back then you just saw, like, a bunch of bums, basically? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm not going to call them a bum. Look, anybody who makes it into the NBA is not a bum.
It's real talk. Yeah, like, that's good. That's
but
nice.
I will say this. I will say, like, I definitely get a feel as if the Wizards now are more of a professional. It's more of a professional organization overall.
That's sad because they play a lick of defense. Sometimes I think.
Well, again, it's evolution, man. It's evolution. A Poland just was setting his ways, so this is how he ran his franchise, and it was difficult for the fan for us to watch it. And my man Wally used to have to watch games on Channel 20 whenever those came on.
Yeah, I know.
You ain't had a cable. Ray
knows.
That was disrespectful.
Yeah, so disrespectful. For a long time, you know, other than like CBS games and then CBS games went to NBC. For the longest time, man, like all I was watching was Bullets games. And that was sad, man. For a while, I thought certain Bullets players were pretty good. Like I used to think that Lito Echols was good. And then when I watched like the Lakers play, I was like, damn, I was wrong. Like, I was wrong. Like, I was so wrong. You know what I'm saying? Kyle Bertani, like later on, I was already hip. But I'm talking about, I was already hip. But, like, I'm talking about, like, Mitchell Butler.
Oh, you were really young.
Yeah, like, Mitchell Butler and Lito Echols. Like, those, Michael
Adams. Mitchell Butler was a blue chips, man. Yeah. Come on,
bro. Bro, that was disrespectful, bro. That was disrespectful. Hey. That was disrespectful. Like, real talk.
Nah, the NBA definitely is much more parity because even the worst teams have a star and they can win on any given night. Yeah. And so it's like, you know, the Lakers this season is a prime example. They go out and they beat the Bucks and they beat the Clippers, mm-hmm. and then they turn around and they lose their next game to Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, it was
like, what
team.
The heck?
Yeah, it was a bad team. No, it's funny. All right,
You beat Kawhi and you lose to Spencer Dinwiddie.
But it's funny, right? So, like, watching the documentary, and I'm sitting there watching, like, I forgot that the Bulls played, like, I think it was 98. The Bulls played, like, the Nets in the first round. And they made the Nets seem, like, so tough. And I'm like, the Nets team wasn't that good. Like, looking at the roster again, I'm like, you had Keith Van Horn. And I'm trying
Kerry Kittles.
Oh, yeah, and that was about
Kerry
it.
Kittles, yeah.
And that was about it. And I'm thinking, and I'm like, yo, I know people talk about, like, today's talent. And I get what people are saying to a certain extent. But I'm always like, you know what, it's evolution. Like, players now are like, right. more athletic, more skilled at certain aspects of basketball. I feel like basketball IQ was better in the 90s and in the 80s. I do think that basketball IQ was better back then. But in terms of talent, these dudes are probably more talented. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Bill Simmons said that.
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I hate when people say,
but
like,
I'm gonna get us out.
Go, Will T.
I just wanted to mention one thing.
Mm-hmm.
From 1989, you want me to? Looking back at the Bullets' old draft. 1989. With the ninth pick in the first round, the Bullets select Tom Hannon.
Oh, God.
He was a beast?
1990, they didn't have a first-round pick, but their two draft picks were in the second round were Greg Foster and A.J. English.
Wow.
A.J. English
was born. 1991, the Bradford Smith, 19th overall pick.
What's up with the Bradford Smith?
1992. Tom Gugliotta.
Yeah, 93 was like Calvert Chamber,
1993,
right?
Calvert Chamber.
Yeah, he was a beast. I like
Calvert. The Bullets suck.
Look, all respect. Tom Gugliotta was good, too. He was good.
Gugliotta went on to the Timberwolves and had a great career.
And ball with KG in Minnesota for a bit. Like, he was all right. Like, Googs was good. Googs wasn't sorry. Everybody.
Calvert Chamber was a star.
But his best years weren't here.
Of course not. Of course. It's the Bullets. The only person that fried with the Bullets was probably who they drafted was Juwan.
No, he put up numbers his rookie year. Calvert Chamber did. His rookie year, he put up numbers.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. And Juwan.
He even dropped 40 in a game.
Oh, did he drop 40? I know he's. I see Calvert Chamber credit.
Calvert Chamber averaged a whole 12 points.
I knew he was going to say something dirty. I will say, Calvert Chamber used to strap. He used to strap on. I mean, he used to play Jordan tough. Now, Jordan still dropped buckets. We used to play him tough. If you watch that playoff series with Weber, Juwan, and Chaney when they played the Bulls that year. What year was that? The fifth championship when the Bullets played the Bulls
in the first round.
Yeah, was that the fifth championship?
Yeah, that's like 95. That's like
Rod Strickland, Tracy Murray.
Yeah.
That team.
Yeah, was that 95?
Yeah, they got swept, but they should have.
They played tough though. They played tough.
Oh, they absolutely
they
did, man.
Tough. You know what I'm saying?
Basketball was so bad here back then that I remember that first round series where. Mm-hmm. USA Arena, the lights went out for the introductions, and my man hit me up like, "Hey, what's up with the lights going out in our arena?" And I'm like, "Wow, like we didn't even have nothing like that. It was the lack of entertainment was real back then, bro. They gave all PG County students, y'all remember that?
Yeah,
a free game.
Yeah, I remember.
And we went and watched Bernard King destroy Orlando. I don't even know who Orlando had. Nobody said he's 30 times, but." I mean, it just speaks to it was terrible. Will, you 100% correct. We need to appreciate Bradley Beal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. We really need to appreciate Bradley Beal, John Wall, Roy Hachimura.
Hachimura,
you know, the guys that they had. Yeah, Hachimura, the guys that they have on the team now, man. Because look, if you were truly a fan and followed this team in the late '80s and the early '90s. You had some garbage teams, man. There's no two lives.
Look, man, it can only get better.
There's no other way to put it.
It can only get better, right? from that from back then to now, it's gotten better. It can only get better, man. Hopefully, it can only get better after this season. You know, it can only get better because this season wasn't the best season either. All right, man. It's time to end the show, man. It was a great show. Good job, fellas. Will T, you know, came in for the second half, man, and fried, man. Appreciate you, Will T. That's like
some, I appreciate it.
I know Will T took us in overtime. You know what I'm saying? We
exactly,
overtime,
dog.
Man.
You know what I'm saying?
So, you get a burst. Let's
do it. That burst. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. All right, man, let's wrap the show up. I forgot what I wanted to say to wrap the show up. All right, I know. you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene
for ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, man, leave us out, big homie.